Hello, I'm Angela, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 28th of April 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post. This remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods. Calling 01902 213 210. Visiting our website, www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website, www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. Reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Tanya, Pete, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look into the history of May Day, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, information about diabetic macular edema, and rounding all that off, one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But we start with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Ed, Angela, Liz, and starting first, it's Christine.
A blame game erupted between councillors in Dudley after a deal to allow some residents to use a Wolverhampton tip collapsed. For almost 20 years, people living in the north of the borough had been able to use the City of Wolverhampton Council's waste recycling centre in Anchor Lane near Coseley. But the arrangement abruptly came to an end earlier this month when the Conservative-led Dudley Council walked away in protest at a proposed 67% hike in charges being applied by their city counterparts. At a full council meeting last Monday, opposition Labour members accused the administration of mishandling the issue. They also said the council had failed to find a provision, leaving residents having to make 18-mile round trips to use the sole Dudley Borough facility in Stourbridge. Authority leader Patrick Harley and Karen Shakespeare, Cabinet Member for Environment, said Wolverhampton had behaved appallingly and given them no time to negotiate a new deal. When the announcement was made on April 1st, Wolverhampton's Deputy Chief Executive, Mark Taylor, said they had asked Dudley Council to pay 32% of the £1 million running costs of Anchor Lane. This meant Dudley would have to pay £333,000 a year for residents to continue using the site, instead of the £200,000 fee previously agreed. Mr. Taylor described it as a fair and proportionate share, adding they had been negotiating for 12 months before the deal collapsed. At Monday's meeting, Labour councillors all grilled the leadership on the issue. Upper Gournall and Woodsetton councillor Kieran Casey said, "No alternative local provision has been put in place for residents in the north, other than having to fill up their car with waste and having to travel an hour's round trip to Stourbridge, which to me is frankly unacceptable."
Thousands more people have had their life-saving COVID-19 jab in Wolverhampton, with increasing numbers receiving both doses. Latest figures show that as of 18th of April, a total of 120,674 first doses have been administered in Wolverhampton, with tens of thousands of people having already returned for their second jab. Meanwhile, across the Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group area, a total of 623,782 first and 180,151 second doses have now been given, up from 610,908 first and 133,244 second doses a week ago. People aged 45 and over, anyone who is clinically extremely vulnerable, frontline health and social care workers, and people who are in receipt of carer's allowance or are the main carer of an elderly or disabled person are now eligible for the free vaccine. Anyone in the above groups who has not yet had their first COVID-19 jab is asked to do so as a matter of urgency. People are also reminded of the need to get their second dose when it is their time, so that they are given the maximum protection against the deadly virus. John Denley, Wolverhampton's Director of Public Health, said, "The vaccine is the best protection we have against coronavirus." Over 120,000 people in Wolverhampton have now had at least one dose, and more people have had both. This is particularly important as the second vaccine acts as a booster, enhancing immunity and offering longer-lasting protection against infection. We know that the easing of restrictions as we leave the COVID-19 lockdown is likely to lead to an increase in infection rates. We've also seen that infection rates are rising rapidly in other parts of the world, such as India, which just goes to show that we cannot afford to let our guard down. Therefore, the message is clear. If you are eligible and haven't already had your jab, please book an appointment as soon as possible. For more information about the vaccine, including the answers to frequently asked questions, please visit www.wolverhampton.gov.uk/vaccine or www.nhs.uk/covid-vaccination. People will need to register with a GP surgery in England in order to receive the vaccine.
Fraudsters have fleeced more than £70 million from people living in our region during the COVID pandemic. Criminals have taken advantage of the rise in internet purchases, as well as concerns over health and well-being through the crisis, according to Action Fraud. The UK's Fraud and Cybercrime Authority said 18,887 incidents of fraud and cybercrime were reported in the West Midlands from the start of February last year to the end of March this year. The value of the crimes amounted to £57.1 million, the equivalent of around £13,467 each day. MPs described the figures as startling and urged caution to stop more people from falling victim. Across Great Britain, 448,700 reports of fraud and cybercrime were made to Action Fraud over the 14 months, with victims' losses totalling £1.9 billion. The figures show that in the West Midlands, online shopping scams were the most common type of fraud, along with advance fee and banking frauds. It comes as tens of thousands in the region have recently received fake texts purporting from the Royal Mail asking for a delivery charge. The figures are likely to be the tip of the iceberg, experts have warned. Jane Parsons, consumer expert at Citizens Advice, said thousands of people had sought advice on scams during the pandemic. For one-to-one advice, we were averaging 2,500 scam cases per month during early lockdown, she said. This increased to a whopping 5,000 cases per month since September 2020. These scams cover all manner of things, from fake investments and sham health products to dating fraud and bogus dog breeders. It's clear opportunistic scammers are taking advantage of the public's current concerns regarding their health, well-being and finances. Anyone who suspects they have been victim of a scam can report it to Action Fraud on 0300 123 2040.
Shoppers across the Black Country in Staffordshire welcomed the return of non-essential shops last week with a spending spree, new figures suggest. As coronavirus restrictions ease, many retailers were allowed to open their doors for the first time since early January. The banking firm Revolut analysed the data of thousands of its customers in parts of the Black Country and Staffordshire between April the 12th, the first date non-essential retail could reopen, and Sunday, comparing it to the average weekly spend in February 2020 before the first coronavirus lockdown started. In the Black Country, shoppers in Dudley spent 113% more on average last week than normal. In Walsall, it was 87% more, Wolverhampton 80% more, and in Sandwell, 67% more. And over in Staffordshire, shoppers in Cannock spent 171% more on average last week than normal. In Stafford, it was 143% more, and in South Staffordshire, it was 94% more. TK Maxx was the most popular shop in Wolverhampton, Walsall, South Staffordshire and Cannock. Primark proved more popular in Sandwell, Dudley and Stafford, according to Revolut's data. Meanwhile, independent stores say people from across the region have been supporting them as they look to make up for lost trade over the last 4 months. Steve Hargreaves, operations manager at Into Merryhill, said it's been great to welcome shoppers back to Merryhill. We had thoroughly planned and prepared our reopening and we're really pleased with how well the first 2 weeks have gone. Our visitors continue to enjoy their much-missed shopping experience with us, with many of our shoppers also snapping up bargains in the sales as well.
West Midlands Police have released footage that shows the moment shots were fired at a parked car in Wolverhampton. Two hooded people can be seen running down Lloyd Street in Whitmarines on CCTV before one points and shoots a gun and they both run away. Nobody was hurt in the shooting, which happened around 7:45 on the 17th of April, and police have appealed for anyone with information to come forward. Officers are yet to track down the gunman. A nearby resident, who was asked to remain not anonymous, said the shooting has left neighbours shaken. He said a car was shot in the incident, but that could have hit somebody's home or killed somebody. It is very worrying. Police found a bullet inside the car and believe the gun was 3D printed. We were out when it happened. They needed all our CCTV footage, and that is the only reason we knew about it. We were all very worried on the street, now as knives are one thing, but guns are next level and they look like kids. A spokeswoman for West Midlands Police said, "We've launched an investigation after shots were fired in Lloyd Street, Whitmarines, at around 7:45 on Saturday, the 17th of April. The passenger side window of a parked car was damaged. Anyone with information is urged to contact us."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. We hope you're all well and enjoying some of the nicer weather we've been having in recent days. There's nothing like feeling the warm sun on your face, right? It's cheered many of us up these last few weeks after what seemed like a never-ending winter. But if you have sight loss, the glare from the sun can be a real pain during the warmer months. If you want to reduce glare and make life more comfortable, why not try a pair of filter glasses designed especially for people with sight loss? Our expert sight loss advisors can help you find the right pair for you. Find out more about the range we have for sale by calling 01902 880 111 Mondays to Fridays. Now, as we've told you last week, we have loved being able to open the doors to our wonderful shops again this month. We're so grateful for the incredible support we've received after we've done it. Like many charities though, we've received an influx of donations, so we're kindly asking if anyone wants to pass something on to us, please think before giving. Is your item in good condition? Does it work? Is it something you would buy? And does it conform to safety standards? And don't forget, please call us in advance of donating to check we're able to accept items. Thanks so much for your support. This week, we thought we'd also bring you some news of local events we thought you might be interested in. First up is the upcoming digital launch of Seeing in Isolation, a project by multi-story photographer Karen Visser and our friends at Samwell Visually Impaired. In a very short space of time at the beginning of a pandemic, blind and visually impaired members of Samwell Visually Impaired overcame the hurdles of working virtually so they could collaborate with photographer Karen Visser. They shared personal stories and photographs in their family albums, did audio recordings, and some found a way to make their own photographs and videos. The result is a series of digital stories of personal accounts that challenge prevailing perspectives on what it might be like to be blind or visually impaired. The digital stories will be launched at two events which will take place on Zoom. The first on May the 6th from 2 to 3:15pm and the second on May the 8th from 5 to 6:15pm. Visit www.multistory.org.uk/project/seeing-in-isolation. Our friends at Black Country Touring have also started a fantastic new project where you can receive a 15-minute one-to-one poem, story or song all over the telephone. To book a free performance, head to www.bctouring.co.uk/book-dial-a-story. That's www.bctouring.co.uk/book-dial-a-story. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back catching up with you again soon.
Cheers, Helen. Thanks for that. Coming up next, we have some more local news.
A stunned Willenhall man was told to dial 999 to get help for his elderly mother who had suffered a fall while she was sat right outside A&E. Gary Hicken rushed his 82-year-old mum Eileen to New Cross Hospital in Wolverhampton after she had taken a tumble and suffered a hip fracture in New Invention Square on April the 16th. But when he went inside for help getting her inside the emergency department, he was told there was no one to help him as staff were not insured and he would be better off calling 999. New Cross Hospital said it would review the incident and apologise to the family. Mr Hicken said, "I couldn't believe what I was hearing. I had gone into reception to explain what had happened and said I just needed someone with experience to help lift her out of the car without doing further damage to her leg and hip. But I was told there wasn't anybody there to help as they were not insured. Then, they said, the best thing I could do is ring 999. I said, "You're having a laugh, aren't you? Seriously, I should dial 999? My first thought was, this isn't right. I've never heard anything like it. I had tried to save wasting time and resources for ambulances, and New Cross is only 15 minutes away from New Invention, but sadly it didn't work out like that. This really needs to be reviewed." A spokeswoman for New Cross Hospital said, "We cannot comment on individual cases, but we'll look into this further. We would like to apologise to Mrs Hicken and her family for any upset and distress this may have caused. We will ensure that all staff are aware of the process if someone presents at our emergency department in this way in the future."
A coronavirus testing centre at Dudley Leisure Centre will close next week as the facility is expected to reopen fully for leisure activities next month. The Dudley Council-run facility has been used for rapid symptom-free testing in recent months as part of the borough's efforts to track positive cases of the virus. The centre reopened last week, offering limited access to gym sessions and lane swimming, and more facilities are expected to reopen within the centre from next month. To allow the centre to prepare to fully reopen to centre users, the testing centre based there will close on Friday, April the 30th, with the last appointment at 4:30pm that day. Karen Wright, Director of Public Health at Dudley Council, said, "Our priority is for everyone, including secondary school age pupils, to have twice weekly rapid symptom-free tests and for it to become second nature as part of their weekly routine. The number of positive cases in the borough is the lowest it has been in months, and through regular testing and the rollout of the vaccine, we can work together to keep case numbers low and protect one another. It's important we give the leisure centre the time it needs to prepare to welcome back visitors, and I would remind people that we have ample testing capacity in other locations along with home testing kits, which give people the flexibility to do a test when it suits them best from the comfort of their own home. The easy-to-use home testing kits are free of charge and can be collected from multiple venues, including participating pharmacies and other locations across the borough. Residents who have had the vaccine should also take twice weekly rapid symptom-free tests. All residents should make sure they upload their results to help further monitor cases in the borough. All secondary school-aged children are expected to test regularly at home. Anyone who tests positive after taking a symptom-free test must self-isolate immediately and book in for a standard coronavirus test.
A major cannabis farm has been discovered at an event centre and wedding venue in the heart of Wolverhampton. Four men were found hiding in a lift shaft at the Diamond Banqueting Suite in Skinner Street when police raided the building last week. Around 700 cannabis plants were growing across the former cinema and bingo hall's four floors after it was converted into a drugs factory. Officers raided the building after being alerted to suspicious activity. It is the second cannabis farm to have been discovered in the heart of Wolverhampton city centre in recent years, after around 200 plants were found growing in the Nationwide building in Queen Square. The four men hiding in the Diamond Suite, aged between 18 and 30, were all arrested on suspicion of cultivating cannabis. Three officers were seen wearing white hazardous waste suits and face masks on Thursday morning as they entered the banqueting suite, which has four floors and can hold up to 750 guests. Opened in 1937 as an Odeon cinema, the Grade 2 listed building has lived a number of different lives. The centre reopened as a Mecca bingo hall in 1983 after the cinema closed, before becoming the banqueting hall suite in 2009. Its three suites have been used for such events such as weddings, Christmas parties and corporate events, as well as professional wrestling, boxing and mixed martial arts events and concerts. The last event held at the banqueting suite was a martial arts event on the 14th of March last year, and the suite has laid dormant since then.
Councils across the Black Country have joined together to seek a new injunction banning car cruising in the region. Wolverhampton, Dudley, Sandwell and Walsall councils are returning to the High Court on May the 13th to seek a new injunction banning car cruising in the region. The proposed injunction would replace one which expired in February and which had been in force for 6 years. The injunction, if granted, will forbid people from participating in, attending, promoting, organising or publicising a car cruise event, with anyone ignoring the injunction facing arrest, penalties such as up to 2 years imprisonment, or an unlimited fine. The application is being led by Wolverhampton Council on behalf of the four Black Country local authorities and West Midlands Police. David Pattinson, Wolverhampton Council's Director of Governance, said, "Car cruising is noisy, dangerous and illegal, and some events have resulted in serious injuries and even death. The previous Black Country-wide injunction proved incredibly effective in reducing instances of car cruising across the region. However, the problem still persists in some areas and has started to grow again since the original injunction expired. It is important that the authorities have the powers they need to crack down on car cruising as and when it occurs. We are naturally keen to see this new injunction granted by the High Court, which will then be introduced as soon as possible."
A major £80 million scheme to help regenerate Dudley Town Centre has moved a step closer after clearing another hurdle. Members of Dudley Council unanimously agreed to spend more than £800,000 on work to help move the Portersfield site regeneration forward at a meeting on Monday. The huge project will cost around £82 million and promises to deliver 347 residential units, 200 student digs, up to 10,000 square feet of retail and leisure space, as well as 38,000 square foot ice rink centre. On April the 1st, the authorities' cabinet had already agreed to partner with developers Avonbury and provide £420,000 funding to develop and submit a planning application for the scheme. This was rubber stamped at the full council meeting, where it was also agreed that a further £150,000 per year for the next 2 years would be provided to fund the council's project management and delivery of the development. Although the report was passed without comment, Council Leader Patrick Harley later referenced Portersfield when quizzed about protecting the borough's green belt land. He said, "You have a firm commitment that we will have a brownfield first policy. The green belt is absolutely precious to us all, and we will do all we can to negate the need to build on that green belt." There are many brownfield sites, and we have seen here tonight on the Portersfield one, 200 student accommodation units, 400 other residential units. That's reclaiming derelict buildings that have stood empty for 15 to 20 years. That's how you protect the green belt, by building where you can on derelict brownfield sites. That's a policy we're enacting that will continue in the future. The project is part of a wider £1 billion regeneration aimed at breathing new life into Dudley Town Centre. Other projects include a £24.5 million new leisure centre, a £24 million transport interchange, enhancements to attractions such as Dudley Zoo and Castle, and the extension of the Midland Metro.
Now we head over to Mina, who asked us the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback Rogers' Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. How big was the first VCR in 1956? Question 2. What did Nintendo sell before computers? Question 3. What was the Flavian Amphitheatre later called? Question 4. What did the Mayans in Central America use for currency? Question 5. How many potato mashers would you have to shell out for a wife? And question 6. What is the name of the lady who first prepared chocolate chip cookies? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thanks for those questions, Mina. I'll give those a little ponder. Now we head to another section of local news. And starting us off, it's Ian.
Motorists in Wolverhampton have been warned of delays and diversions due to road closures as part of the ongoing metro extension works in the city centre. From Monday, traffic has been directed in the opposite direction to its normal flow along St George's Parade, at its junction with Snow Hill and Garrick Street, inbound from Bilston Street Island. This arrangement is due to be in place for around 4 weeks. It will allow pedestrian footpath extension works to take place. Traffic will still be able to leave the city via Bilston Street outbound. Piper's Row will remain open throughout this stage of the works. The Midland Metro Alliance has apologised in advance for any inconvenience this may cause to people driving through the city centre. The works on the Midland Metro extension in Wolverhampton got underway in 2017. The final stages of the construction are now underway as the schemes move closer to completion. The start of the final phase of the project follows the successful completion of works, including track laying and road surfacing along Piper's Road and Railway Drive in 2019, before a pause in the project to allow the station works to begin. Paul Brown, Midland Metro Alliance Construction Director, said, "Our return to Wolverhampton to complete the final stages of construction for the metro extension signals a really important step in the project, and I am delighted that these works are now getting underway. When complete, the Wolverhampton City Centre Metro extension will provide a much-needed boost to public transport by allowing people to easily change between train, tram and bus."
A new non-invasive test for people with stomach and bowel problems can now be given in the Black Country and West Birmingham to help rule out bowel cancer and potentially avoid a trip to hospital. From this month, the test can now be given to people who visit their GP with problems that could indicate the presence of bowel cancer. It is hoped this will mean fewer people will need to undergo an endoscopy procedure in hospital, as the simple test can help to rule out the presence of bowel cancer among patients with specific lower abdominal symptoms. FIT testing, symptomatic faecal immunochemical testing, is currently available in Dudley, but funding from the new Black Country and West Birmingham Clinical Commissioning Group has been secured to ensure this can be rolled out for any patients who present with symptoms including stomach complaints, pain, discomfort or changes in bowel habits. Dr. Masood Ahmed, Chief Medical Officer for BCWB CCG, said, "I'm delighted that we're now able to roll out this test across the whole Black Country and West Birmingham. The discreet nature of this at-home test, which avoids a hospital visit for those who don't need one, should encourage people to come forward earlier and enable us to either rule out cancer quickly and put their minds at rest, or to get treatment started much sooner and improve outcomes." April is National Bowel Cancer Awareness Month, which aims to raise awareness of the importance of bowel cancer screening and of recognising the symptoms and seeking help early. Bowel cancer is highly treatable, and nearly everyone who is diagnosed at the earliest stage survives. However, this drops significantly as the disease develops.
Businesses in Wolverhampton have been reminded of the deadline to apply for financial support for rapid COVID-19 testing. Wolverhampton Council are encouraging organisations which commit to more than 75% of their workforce being tested twice a week to apply for business testing grants worth up to £10,000. Grants of £500 are available to businesses with one or two employees, and £2,000 is available to those with between 3 and 49 employees. Businesses with 50 to 249 staff can apply for grants of £5,000, and grants of £10,000 are available to those employing 250 workers or more. Businesses will receive 25% of the grant when they apply, and the remaining 75% after demonstrating they have met their weekly commitment to get 75% of staff tested twice a week up to the end of June. Around 400 local employers have so far been approved or started an application for a business testing grant, and nearly £250,000 in upfront and final payments has already been committed to those meeting the eligibility criteria. Employers have up until 30th of April to apply, with businesses which are expected to be able to open from the 17th May also encouraged to apply. To find out more, go to wolverhampton.gov.uk/testing grant.
A controversial plan to build new homes on land in Cradley is set to be approved despite fears it could ruin a thriving high street. Members of Dudley Council's Development Control Committee are being advised to approve the proposal to build 10 houses and a bungalow on two parcels of land on Fordraft Street. But a number of concerns have been raised by more than 50 people from 40 nearby properties who are worried about a raft of issues, including the loss of green space, an increase in crime and antisocial behaviour, and traffic. There are also concerns about the impact it could have on nearby businesses, with the loss of the small amount of parking currently available on the site. However, planning officers believe concerns have been addressed and are recommending committee approve the plan at a meeting next Wednesday. The proposal, submitted to the authority by SP Fazey Chartered Accountants, involves a 6 two-bedroom and 4 three-bedroom homes, along with a single bedroom bungalow. There will also be landscaping, a communal space, and a new access road created as part of the development. During the consultation exercise, one objector said, "If this development goes ahead, not only will it ruin all the 10 businesses that are at the top of Windmill Hill, you will also attract antisocial behaviour and increased traffic. All the businesses serve the local community as well as out-of-town customers. 4 car parking spaces are nowhere near enough. You cannot expect elderly or disabled people to walk up from the church car park, and certainly not expect them to park on already busy and congested roads. The sheer rise in traffic is dangerous."
The organiser of a petition to get an ice rink constructed in Dudley is feeling optimistic that her campaign has been successful. Leah Court, aged 22, believes that the people of Dudley would benefit enormously from such an attraction, and petitioned the Borough Council to build one in partnership with developers. She has spoken to council bosses and said that she was hopeful regeneration plans for the borough could see an ice rink built within the next 2 years. Leah, a science student at Wolverhampton University, enjoys ice skating as a hobby, but has had to travel as far as Cannock to enjoy the activity. She began raising an online petition to get an ice rink for her hometown last August and was delighted when more than 500 people and some local councillors backed the move. Dudley used to have a skating rink many years ago, which was sited opposite the station hotel. Leah said, "I am obviously delighted that Dudley Borough Council has included an ice rink along with the new homes and shops as part of a proposed regeneration scheme. I am hopeful that an ice rink could be built in the next 2 years and would just like to say a massive thanks to everyone who signed the petition."
Now we head over to Pete, who asks us some information on diabetic macular edema.
Diabetic macular edema. People with diabetes are at risk of damage to their eyesight. To work properly, the eye needs a constant supply of blood. And when control of blood sugar and insulin levels in the body are poor, the blood vessels of the retina at the back of the eye become blocked and damaged, leading to a condition known as diabetic retinopathy. Diabetic retinopathy, in turn, can lead to diabetic macular edema, where leaky blood vessels from the retina cause fluid to build up in the macula. Edema means fluid retention. The macula is the part of the retina that controls central vision for fine detail reading and colour, while retinopathy affects peripheral vision, diabetic macular edema affects central vision and results in a condition very similar to wet macular degeneration. Damage to the macula can mean losing the ability to read, watch TV, or recognise faces. The symptoms of diabetic macular edema are dark spots like smudge on glasses or gaps in your vision, especially first thing in the morning. Objects might change shape, size or colour, or seem to move or disappear. Colours can fade. Bright light and glare could be difficult. Difficulty with reading, and straight lines may appear distorted or bent. The longer you have diabetes, the greater your chance of developing sight loss through diabetic macular edema. If you notice a sudden change in your vision, contact your optician, GP or eye specialist straight away. If diabetic macular edema, sometimes known as DMO, is suspected, you will be referred to the eye hospital for tests. DMO can be treated if caught early through injections to reduce fluid leakage. Some people may be offered laser treatment. Diabetes is a lifelong condition, so maintaining a healthy lifestyle and monitoring your blood sugar, blood pressure, and cholesterol levels is important to avoid damage to your eyes. It is also very important to attend annual diabetic eye screening appointments to reduce the risk of vision loss.
Cheers, Pete. Now we head to our final block of local news, brought to us by Christine, Ian, Angela, Ed, and first up, it's Liz.
A business owner has thanked a Black Country hospital for caring for her poorly son by donating wall art to a children's area. Carly Mills of Two Thirds Design wanted to give something back to Russell's Hall Hospital after they cared for her 8-year-old son, Ashton, during the first lockdown. So, with her business partner, Jill Slazor, she came up with an undersea design to brighten up the assessment unit on the children's ward at the Dudley-based hospital. The engaging wall art will help distract children at what could be a scary time for them in hospital. Carly, a mother of two from near Stourbridge, said, "I personally spent a lot of time in Russell Hall's emergency department with my 8-year-old son during the first lockdown as he was experiencing severe abdominal pain. He was diagnosed with a hernia in November and needed an urgent operation. I was very grateful for how quickly they tried to get him operated on under the COVID issues the hospital was trying to manage." Her business has specialised in transforming school spaces for more than 10 years with window, floor and wall vinyls and custom wallpaper. She came up with a design printed on special vinyl wallpaper featuring fascinating facts about sea creatures and fish playing hide and seek for young patients to spot. Diane Wake, Chief Executive of the Dudley Group NHS Foundation Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital, said, "This is a lovely gesture from Carly and Two Thirds Design and helps to make the unit a really bright and friendly place which should help to put young patients at their ease. We are really grateful for this generous offer and are glad we were able to provide first-class care to her son despite the demands of the pandemic at the time."
A Wolverhampton shopkeeper has retired after working for 52 years at the same convenience store. Father of two, Malcolm, aged 66, began his working life when he was 14 years old as a paperboy for his family, who ran a newsagent in the area. A few years later, he and his brother Gordon, aged 76, acquired the grocery shop next door and in 1997 moved everything to the current site, now known as Spa Compton. Malcolm said, "I'm retiring after 52 years of first working as a paperboy. I'm not certain about what I'm going to do in retirement and will just be taking things as they come. The last 12 months have been so busy because of COVID and because of the pandemic we have had to step up to the challenge as many other places were closed." His wife, Janet, aged 60, and his brother, Gordon, aged 76, have been helping out in the shop. Malcolm said, "It will be a very sad day when I retire, as we are in a nice area, and we genuinely have really nice customers." Shopkeeper Giles Morrell will officially take over the store on Monday morning.
A Black Country care worker has scooped £300,000 on the National Lottery after picking up two winning scratch cards. Bianca Merton, who is known as Bee, said she would continue with her work visiting the elderly in their homes, although she planned to get a car so she no longer had to walk to appointments. Bee, 31, from Bilston, won the top prize after buying two lucky numbers scratch cards for £3 each from the one-stop convenience store in Bridge Street last week. "I won a fiver on the first scratch card, so I was pretty pleased. I was just about to walk through the front door, having scratched the second one, when it all went a bit crazy." Bee said her first reaction was one of disbelief. "I looked again and couldn't believe what I was staring at, so much so that I started to shake," she said. "I asked my partner to look at it and he wasn't 100% sure, so he then called his dad to check it for me. After many checks and double checks, it really did look like I'd won, and then I just started to cry." Bee, originally from Somerset, bought her life-changing scratch cards on Tuesday last week. "It gives me so much security just to think that when I pay off my mortgage, it will be the safe and secure home for my family forever," she said. "I'll certainly also feel a lot calmer having no more debt to worry about." But Bee said any celebrations were likely to be low-key due to the pandemic. "We'll go to the pub in our bubble, but due to my job working with the vulnerable and elderly, we'll just have a small party sometime in the future," she said.
A punter from Sedgley is on the verge of being crowned the UK's top tipster, and with it a prize for £4,000. Andrew Morris is just 2 days away from winning the annual horse racing Naps table, run by the Racing Post and bookmaker Coral, surging more than £40 ahead of his rivals. A string of big price winners this spring has left the 35-year-old from Sedgley sprinting clear from the pack with the finish line in sight. The tipster, a former Express and Star journalist, said he was thrilled to be putting the region on the map in a competition that features racing experts from across the UK and Ireland. He was already top in March when backing 33-1 Coral Cup scorer Heaven Help Us, and that win has been supplemented this week with Aquila Sky 9-1, trained by Shropshire's Sam Alwood. Final Fantasy 4-1 at Kempton, and then Scottish Grand National winner Mighty Thunder at 8-1, giving him a lead with just days left. He said it would be an absolute dream come true to be crowned the Racing Post Naps champion, and I cannot believe how the season has worked out. "You are up against the cream of the crop in racing circles, and to think I am on the verge of hopefully beating them is the stuff of dreams. So what is the secret to finding winners? Watch as much racing as you can and follow the form. I love two types of horses, those who have recently won and are game improvers, and those who have tumbled down the weights to a previously winnable mark. But more than anything, if you see something in a horse that you like, believe in it. especially those from smaller yards who are underrated by the bookies.
Open Air Theatre is set to return to Wolverhampton in late summer with a production of Shakespeare's Macbeth at Bantock House Museum and Park. Audiences are encouraged to bring a chair, sun hat and a glass of something chilled. Macbeth will be performed by a thespian group, the Lord Chamberlain's Men, who are the modern incarnation of Shakespeare's original company of the same name and perform with an all-male cast. The company also hosted a sold-out showing of A Midsummer Night's Dream before the pandemic. Richard Lawrence, Wolverhampton Council's Director of Regeneration, said, "It is fantastic to see that theatre is returning in a safe way to such an incredible venue." The event, hosted in 2019, was a spectacular event and enjoyed by a sell-out crowd. "I do hope that as many people as possible will get behind this event and support the arts after the difficult time the industry has had."
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who has for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone. I hope that you're all okay and feeling a bit more relaxed now that the weather is a bit more cheerful for us. Anyway, here goes with yet another dose of amazing items for you to dazzle your friends with. So, did you know that when the first VCR, video camera recorder, was made in 1956, it was the size of a piano? Way bigger than I would have guessed. It used 1-inch wide tape and cost $50,000, so it was only affordable to TV corporations, large companies and governments. The first affordable TV recorder for domestic use appeared in 1975 by JVC and by Sony in 1977. The machines cost around £3,000 in today's money, and the blank tapes around 20 quid. Now, we've all heard of Sony and the like, but the one, founded in 1889, is Nintendo. It's been around long before computers. So what did they sell? Well, from 1889 to 1956, Nintendo was a playing card company. They still manufacture cards in Japan, and even have a bridge tournament called the Nintendo Cup. The famous Colosseum in Rome was originally known as Amphitheatrum Flavium, or Flavian Amphitheatre. Residents of Rome nicknamed it the Colosseo. Because it was built next to a 160-foot statue of Emperor Nero, it was known as the Colossus of Nero. Cocoa beans were a favoured form of currency in Central America. First used by the Mayans as a barter material in exchange for such things as food or clothing in the 1500s, when Spain colonised most of Central America. The cocoa bean was introduced to the world and exported globally. Due to the low yield of the cocoa plant, the beans became a rare commodity with a high price tag. In 1555, there was an official exchange rate placed on cocoa beans that stated that one Spanish reel of cotton was worth 140 cocoa beans. And while I'm telling you about weird currencies, definitely one of the stranger ones on the list by a long shot is that the Bafia potato mashers were used as an ancient form of currency in trading in Bafia. Now, Bafia, as we all know, is a province of Cameroon in Africa and is the home of the Bantu people. In ancient Bafia culture, a wife could be purchased for the price of 30 potato mashers. Now then, who knows where the recipe for chocolate chip cookies comes from? Well, actually, nobody does. One suggestion is that Ruth Wakefield, the creator of chocolate chip cookies, ran out of nuts for ice cream cookies and used chocolate instead. Others suggested chocolate chunks accidentally fell into the mixer. But the true story has never been confirmed, and if Ruth did know, she ain't telling. Well, actually, that's it for this week, folks. Seems a bit short but sweet, but never mind. I'm off for a cup of tea. See you next week. Bye for now. Ta-ra!
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead starts off dry, but after the weekend, we're greeted by rain. Temperatures will be hovering around 12 to 14 degrees. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. the sunrise and sunset times of 5:34 a.m. for the sunrise and 8:38 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 30th of April and Saturday 1st of May, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 12 degrees. On Sunday 2nd of May, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. On Monday 3rd of May through to Wednesday 5th of May, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. And finally, on Thursday 6th of May, we have light cloud and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 14 degrees. So that's your forecast for the week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Cheers for that weather update. And now it's time for another edition of Sounds of Nature, which this week is presented by Mina.
The red deer is the UK's largest deer. Males have large branching antlers, increasing in size as they get older. During the autumnal breeding season, known as the rut, males bellow to proclaim their territory and will fight over the females, sometimes injuring each other with their sharp antlers. A single calf is usually born the following spring. Red deer live on moorland and mountainsides, as well as grassland near to the woodland. They can be seen in deer parks throughout the country. Red deer mainly eat grasses, sedges, rushes and dwarf shrubs like heather.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian, and here's your latest football news. A shameful and weak display from Wolves saw Chris Wood wreak havoc in an emphatic 4-0 victory for Burnley at Molineux. Well aware of Wood's capabilities, having suffered against him several times in the past, Nuno Espirito Santo's side put in their worst performance of the season, which cannot end soon enough. The defending was downright atrocious as the former Albion man gratefully grabbed a first-half hat-trick. He then set up Ashley Westwood towards the end to rub salt into the wounds. Not showing a speck of fight or urgency, this could well be the most inadequate performance of Nuno's reign. Wolves had the chance to make it 3 league wins on the spin for the first time this season, but instead, they were completely outbattled and outclassed by Sean Dyche's outfit. It could have been more than 4 as well. No number of words can really do justice to how bad Wolves were in this game. They know what Wood is all about, but they could not stop him and barely even tried to. His hat-trick, after opening the scoring and swiftly adding a second, was a formality. Setting up Westwood late on, too, he would love to play against Wolves' defence every week. Nuno has prided his team on organisation and robustness over the years, but there was absolutely no evidence of proper shape or structure here. Woeful defensive displays had, unfortunately, already been seen a few times this season, but this takes the cake as the most gruesome of the lot. Going forward as well, they remained toothless. Once Burnley had their lead, they were strolling. It has already been said on multiple occasions that this coming summer is a huge one for Wolves, and this terrible outing further hammered home that point. Nuno said afterwards, "It is not a question of attitude, but this performance had all the hallmarks of a team that is already safe from the drop." The Clarets, meanwhile, who came into the game sitting 17th and needing points, made their fans proud with a passionate, productive 90 minutes. Serious work must be done over the close season to improve the squad. Wolves next take on the Baggies at the Hawthorns on Bank Holiday Monday. A stoppage time goal from substitute Keenan Davis saw Villa grab a point in a pulsating derby against Albion. In what proved to be a thoroughly entertaining clash at Villa Park, both teams played with plenty of attacking intent in a bid to give their fans the local bragging rights. It was Dean Smith's side who started the brighter of the two teams, and they opened the scoring in the 9th minute when Anwar El Ghazi slotted it in a penalty after Ross Barkley had been fouled. Albion pulled level with a spot kick of their own when Mateus Pereira converted after Ainsley Maitland-Niles was tripped. The Baggies then got themselves in front shortly after the restart when Mbaye Diagne's strike was turned into his own net by Tyrone Mings. Both teams created numerous chances from that point with goalkeepers Emiliano Martinez and Sam Johnston in excellent form. The Baggies came close to getting a third when Ezri Konsa turned a corner against his own post. At the other end, Davis smashed the woodwork following a goalmouth scramble, but in the end it was the striker who had the last laugh, with Davis slamming the ball home in stoppage time after Kyle Bartley was caught in two minds on how to make a clearance. The result means Albion now sit 9 points from safety with just 5 games left to play. Villa are 11th. Albion next take on Wolves at the Hawthorns this coming Bank Holiday Monday.
Thanks for that sports update, Ian. Now we head over to Tanya, who has a look at the origins and history of May Day.
Hello, this is Tanya with a piece about May Day traditions across the country. May Day being the day which marks the beginning of summer. May Day is usually observed on the 1st of May. This year, 2021, the May Day bank holiday will take place on Monday the 3rd of May, with celebrations over the long weekend. Workers and school children will have a day off to celebrate the end of spring and the start of summer with their friends and family. The Feast of Floralia, or Festival of Flowers, believed to have been celebrated by the Romans, preceded May Day. But the name and the celebrations changed over the years to what we now know it to be. The 1st of May is also known as International Workers' Day, particularly in socialist and communist countries. But we're focusing here on the traditional British celebrations heralding the summer. In the UK, May Day is marked by traditional country celebrations. The main ones, such as Morris dancing, Maypole dancing, and the crowning of a May Queen, still occur all over the country in villages, towns, and cities. Crowning of the May Queen is important for many, with the mayor or a local committee nominating a girl to lead a procession around the village green. Traditionally, the May Queen is dressed in white and crowned with a wreath of country flowers, and often she sits on a throne to watch the afternoon's activities. Maypole dancing takes place around a tall white pole in the centre of the green, usually with children from local schools. Each dancer holds a long, colourful ribbon which is wound crisscross around the pole as they dance to produce a pretty pattern on the pole. Again, white is traditional for clothing, with girls in white dresses and boys in white shirts. Often, folk musicians play the music to accompany the dances, typically using accordions, drums, and fifes or pipes. The same musicians will also play for Morris dancers who dress in traditional white outfits with bells around their ankles to ring out the rhythms as they dance. Sticks and handkerchiefs are used in the dances, and some dancers also have hats adorned with feathers, flowers, or wheat. Others sometimes have coloured faces to represent characters in the stories told by the dancers. Dances, traditions, and costumes worn by the Morris dancers do vary across the country as regions mark May Day in different ways. Just a few examples of these are: in Whitstable in Kent, a character dressed in green is called Jack the Green. In Cambridgeshire villages, girls make May dolls, which they leave on doorsteps for occupants to find. Oxford celebrates with May madrigals, sang by the choir of Magdalen College on top of the college tower. This takes place at 6 a.m. on May morning, and usually a rowdy crowd of students who celebrated the night before can be seen listening to the tunes. It's also traditional that some students jump off the Cherwell Bridge into the River Cherwell below. But this is a dangerous act as the river is only 61 centimetres deep in some places. However, wherever the celebrations take place and however different they may be, especially in this year of COVID-19, the meaning behind them all remains the same. Welcome to summertime!
Thanks for that, Tanya. Fascinating stuff. Now we head over to Mina, who has for us the answers to this week's quiz. So Mina, do you have the answers ready?
I have. So here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. How big was the first VCR in 1956? And the answer is as big as a piano. Question 2. What did Nintendo sell before computers? And the answer here is playing cards. Question 3. What was the Flavian Amphitheatre later called? The answer, the Colosseum. Question 4. What did the Mayans in Central America use for currency? And the answer here is cocoa beans. Question 5. How many potato mashers would you have to shell out for a wife? And the answer is 30. And finally, question 6. What is the name of the lady who first prepared chocolate chip cookies? And the answer here is Ruth Wakefield, allegedly. How did you do? Great, I hoped. But if not, don't worry, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. Whilst the fundamentals of the internal combustion engine have long been understood, the Chinese were developing cranks over 2,000 years ago, and our own John Barber, a mining engineer working in Warwickshire, patented a gas turbine in 1791, it was the entrepreneurs of the 19th century to whom we more generally ascribe its perfection in a widely usable form. Gottlieb Daimler, Carl Benz, Rudolf Diesel and Robert Bosch are just some of the names that resonate to this day in that most ubiquitous of manifestations, the motor car. Yet it is questionable whether any of these luminaries could have envisaged its ascendancy over the next 100 years, as virtually every continent based their industrial strategies around the manufacture of the horseless carriage. The UK was blessed, or cursed depending on one's perspective, with being at the forefront of car construction, and numerous tenderfoots sprang up, in some cases falling back down again with equal rapidity. Car and component manufacturing became a mainstay of our industrial strategy throughout the 20th century, in which those who fell by the wayside were countered by those who not only prospered, but went on to become iconic. One of these, and a name that is particularly associated with the Midlands, is Jaguar Land Rover. The current personification of Jaguar Land Rover Automotive PLC is owned by Tata Motors of India, but still has its British HQ near Coventry. The company's flagship engine manufacturing centre is now based at the I-54 Business Park, just north of Wolverhampton, thus cementing a continuing loyalty to the region. Prior to their merger, both Jaguar and Land Rover enjoyed their own illustrious histories and have a heritage of vehicles that have become classics. The original all-terrain four-wheel drive Land Rover, launched at the Amsterdam Motor Show in April 1948, remained in continuous production for almost 68 years. In its various incarnations, it dominated the four-wheel drive utility vehicle scene right up to being discontinued in January 2016. Whilst JLR now make a range of cars under the Land Rover tag, it is still the venerable Landy with which the name is universally associated. That may provide the basis for another tale, but for this context, I'm taken by those of the Jaguar stable, and, as will become apparent, none more so than the legendary Jaguar E-Type. Jaguar's business was originally founded in 1922 as the Swallow Sidecar Company, making motorcycle sidecars, before diversifying into bodies for passenger cars. In association with the Standard Motor Company, the business extended to complete cars that were sold under the name Jaguar, and in 1945, the company changed its name from SS Cars to Jaguar Cars. Successive mergers led to it eventually becoming part of British Leyland, which was nationalised in 1975. In 1990, Ford acquired Jaguar Cars and then Land Rover in 2000. Ford subsequently sold both to Tata Motors in 2008, and in 2013, Jaguar Land Rover Limited became the unitary brand for both marks. The E1A was the prototype of the production Jaguar E-Type that came to embody the spirit of the 1960s. Crooner Frank Sinatra drove one, as did film star Grace Kelly, later to become Princess Grace of Monaco on Marriage to Prince Rainier. In addition to being a seductively stunning design, the E-Type was also one of the fastest in its day, and almost half a century since the last roll off the production line, can still show a clean pair of heels. Even Enzo Ferrari, hardly a shrinking varlet when it came to his own exquisite automobiles, was moved to describe the E-Type as the most beautiful car ever made. The story goes that in 1957, when the project was still top secret, a prototype was lent to one Lieutenant Colonel Christopher Jennings, editor of the Motor magazine. An enthusiast with a passion for speed, Jennings had his favourite roads, and one of them had obtained his quickest run in an Aston Martin. Understandably, Jaguar were interested in seeing how their model fared against the Aston, and it is from this point that I cannot continue the tale without revealing my hand, the denouement that is the Welsh connection. You see, the aforementioned Jennings' favourite road in this instance was the route between Brecon and his home in Carmarthenshire. Just after dawn, on what was described as a perfect May morning in 1957, Jennings set off in the Jaguar, accompanied by his wife Margaret, herself an accomplished racing driver. Jennings subsequently reported, "We made a 20-mile warming-up run and then had a go. The result was almost fantastic. The first 20 miles from Carmarthen to Llandovery were covered at an average of just over 70 miles per hour, and Brecon was reached in 43 minutes. The return journey was made at a fast touring speed by my wife, but nevertheless equaled the Aston Martin record of 50 minutes. At no time did we exceed 120 miles per hour. It will be seen, therefore, that the new Jaguar is a potential world beater." Jennings was evidently given to prescience. Before the model was discontinued in 1975, it had notched up around 72,000 units, an impressive number for such a prestigious vehicle. Fashion fades, but pedigree is constant, and in January 2017, a rare 1963 lightweight competition model sold at auction for just shy of £6 million. The Principality is still a mecca for fans of the Big Cat, as Jaguar cars are affectionately known, and is host to several enthusiast clubs. But the gathering of Saturday the 15th of July 2017 at the Castle Hotel in Brecon was special, being almost the 60th anniversary of Lieutenant Colonel Jennings' exploits back in May 1957. Setting off at a markedly more leisurely pace than Jennings, a convoy of around 40 Big Cats made their way to Carmarthen for display in the town centre and thence to Pendine Sands before returning to Brecon. Pendine Sands are some 7 miles of beach at Carmarthen Bay that have been used for racing since the early 1900s. The first land speed record attempt was by the legendary Malcolm Campbell, who, on the 25th of September 1924, set a record of 146.16 miles per hour in his 350 horsepower aero engine car Bluebird. Significantly, Bluebird was made by Sunbeam. Yet another Black Country name with an illustrious past, Sunbeam was based in Wolverhampton, where there is still the road named after his founder, John Marston. In 1927, again on the sands but with a different bluebird, Campbell raised the record to 174.22 miles per hour. The sands still attract speed enthusiasts, some quite idiosyncratic. In May 2018, one Mr. Kevin Nix broke his own record for taking what he claims to be the only road-legal motorised garden shed to 101 miles per hour. Around the same time, it was announced that the area could be destined for refurbishment, with proposals for a museum, events facility and a hostel. For the 60th anniversary of Jennings' attainments, one could well imagine that a demonstration of blistering performance would take second place to pride of ownership. After all, it would seem counterintuitive to see all that effort and elbow grease to buff your pride and joy until it gleamed be wasted by driving past onlookers so quickly they couldn't notice it. Hardly the stuff of showmanship. And I say that with some confidence, since, I freely confess, I do exactly the same with my own modest collection of vehicles, unfortunately none of which is, as yet, a Jaguar. The world-conquering Jaguar and its E-Type, even after all these years synonymous with the West Midlands motor industry, can still emit a mighty metaphorical and actual roar. But in celebrating its glory, let us not forget Bana Cymru I Dre Goch. And, if my Welsh pronunciation is up to speed, I have described the Red Dragon Passant on a white background, which for more than half a century has helped imbue its fire. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!